All right, it is 6 p.m. I would like to call to order the Oro Valley Planning and Zoning Commission, a regular session commission meeting to order for June 7th, 2022. Ms. Ancona, will you please do a roll call vote for us?
Commissioner Bergsma?
Here.
Vice Chair Harrington?
Here.
Commissioner Nichols?
Here.
Commissioner Posey?
Here.
Commissioner Sturman?
Here.
And Chair Gamble?
Here.
Let the record show we have a quorum.
All right. Thank you all for being here. And for our commission members who are joining via Zoom, we appreciate you guys. As we're going on with the pandemic, it's great that we have this technology to be able to all gather tonight. So for those of you who have never been here before, I would like to point out that if you need to go to the bathroom or need to get a drink of water, out the doors and then to the right, there is a bathroom and a water fountain. And those are here for everyone. So with that, if you'll all stand and follow me in the Pledge of Allegiance. All right, thank you so much. I'd like to start off our meeting with a call to the audience. At this time, any member of the public is allowed to address the commission on any issue not listed on today's agenda. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, individual commission members may ask town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. However, the commission may not discuss or take legal action on matters raised during call to the audience. In order to speak during call to the audience, please specify what you wish to discuss when completing the blue speaker card. We have not received any blue speaker cards or any emails indicating that someone on Zoom has a comment they'd like to make, so I'd like to close the call to the audience. And we do not have a council member here today, so I will skip over our council liaison comments and head straight into our regular session agenda. Ms. Ancona, will you please read our first item?
Review and approval of the May 3rd, 2022 regular session meeting minutes.
Can I get a motion? Approval, motion. Commissioner Nichols?
Yes, motion to approve.
Second?
Second.
All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Ms. Ancona, will you please read out our second agenda item?
Discussion and possible action on a conceptual architecture request for a new urgent care and medical office building located in the San Dorado Shopping Center, 2200689.
All right, thank you. I'd like to turn the time over to staff presenter, Mrs. Oden.
Good evening, and thank you, Chair Gamble and members of the commission. My name is Hannah Oden, and I'm a senior planner with the Town of Oro Valley. So the purpose of this case is to consider the applicant's request for conceptual architecture approval for a new approximately 6,800 square foot urgent care and medical office building, which is located on a vacant building pad in the San Dorado Shopping Center. Conceptual architecture for commercial buildings does require a recommendation from the Planning and Zoning Commission with final decision by Town Council. So this case is being presented tonight for discussion and a possible recommendation. So as a reminder to the commission, the focus of this case is on the architectural design only. So to orient ourselves, the subject property, which is outlined in yellow on this slide, is located within the San Dorado Shopping Center, which is located east of Oracle Road and south of First Avenue. The Target and Fry's are located just west across Oracle, and the property is within the Town Center Planned Area Development. So the proposed front elevation is shown at the top of this slide, and the rear elevation is on the bottom with the proposed colors and materials on the right side of the slide. Now, the front elevation will be the most visible because it faces Oracle Road. The applicant utilizes a varied roofline, trim, metal canopies, covered entryways, brick columns, and inset arches to articulate these facades. The colors, materials, and building design is similar to the existing buildings in the shopping center, and is also consistent with the town center planned area development. The proposed building also lies within the Oracle Road Scenic Corridor Overlay District, and the proposed architecture is compliant with the design standards for that overlay district by utilizing colors that blend in with the natural environment and utilizing a varied roofline to help preserve mountain views. Its tallest point, the building is 26 feet tall, and all roof-mounted electrical equipment will be fully screened by parapets. So this slide shows the side elevations of the proposed building. The north elevation faces the existing building where Mod Pete's is located, and the south elevation faces the existing access drive. So again, that facade will also be one of the most visible. These elevations use similar architectural treatments to the front and rear elevations to provide four-sided architecture to articulate the facades. Windows with metal canopies have also been included, kind of higher up, to provide architectural interest while still maintaining patient privacy, and consistent colors and materials are incorporated throughout. The proposed building uses similar architectural elements and designs as the surrounding buildings, both within the San Dorado Shopping Center and nearby areas, and it does complement the architectural design of the surrounding community. So in summary, the proposed architecture is consistent with the design principles and standards of the zoning code, as well as the town center planned area development, and staff recommends approval. Now, as a reminder to commission, this case requires a recommendation by the Planning and Zoning Commission with a final decision by town council. This concludes my presentation, and the applicant is also here tonight to present additional details about their proposal. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Ms. Oden. I'd like to turn the time over to the applicant. And I didn't catch your name, so please introduce yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hi, my name is Sheila Schmidt. Thank you. My name is Sheila Schmidt. I'm the Vice President of Development for Meridian. Meridian is a full-service real estate developer specializing in healthcare. We've developed over 3 million square feet of healthcare projects to date. And that's actually over the last 10 years. Over the last 5 months, the design that's been presented to you by staff evolved through a close collaboration with the Oral Valley Planning Department and our team. I'd like to thank the town staff, especially Senior Planner Hannah Oden, for the great staff presentation and for helping us bring this design forward to you today within the timelines that we requested. I'd like to now hand the presentation over to Meridian's design partner, Hyten Company. We hope that you'll be as delighted as we are by the design vision that Julie and Gary brought forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheila. Good evening. You have two for one tonight. I'm Julie Hyten with Hyten Company, and it's my brother, Gary Hyten, and partner, fellow architects with Hyten Company. We are local... A local design firm that specializes in healthcare. We've kind of come a little full circle with the design for this urgent care center in that I designed back in the late 90s the urgent care center that was in the Rancho Vistoso urgent care building that is now vacant. And that kind of, it sort of explains the way that healthcare has migrated from outer campuses now into the community, into places where people go to shop and bank and dine. And so this is going to be a welcome addition to right in the heart of the San Dorado community area. I'm not sure quite how to... Okay. So the slide we have up there now just kind of shows some of the adjacent views from our site Boy, what a fantastic parcel for us to have as a blank canvas, eh? Right at the base there of the Catalina Mountains. All of these buildings are just you know, in a fantastic spot. The architecture that's there is in our opinion, very rich. The buildings are definitely Class A in terms of how they're articulated on all sides. And obviously that's a testament to the town with the way they, you know, require that of their architects, and it shows. You go north of McGee, and all of a sudden things start getting better looking, in our opinion. So I won't stay too much on that slide. This slide here just kind of gives you a couple of snippets of some of the rich architecture of the San Dorado Plaza. You can see the mountains in the background there. You can see the mortar-washed block and precast concrete, which is a big feature of the plaza. And the shading devices are a combination of wood trellis structures and metal awnings. So basically, Hannah spoke to this a lot, but you know, we feel like we tied in with the design in terms of the differentiation on four sides. The mechanical units will all be screened. One of the big features of this building that sets it apart from the others is that we do have a 10 or 11 foot deep entry into the building, and I'll show you that on the plan here in a minute. But the building components, or the materials, if you will, are the desert-hued stucco, the mortar-washed adobe slump block, the precast, and then the curved parapets, which you can see here on the front of the Chipotle and the back of these buildings, is a big feature here, adds some visual interest. This slide here kind of points out some of the very specific things that we're tied into. And I'm not sure if I have a time limit, so I'll move on to kind of give you guys time to ask us questions. I know Hannah presented this 3D graphic rendering that we had done that pretty much looks like you could just walk in the door right there, doesn't it? You can see we have a bench under the entryway and an inset landscaped area. Other parts of the building we have at the inset arches, we're creating a backdrop for some of the specimen ocotillo and different landscape items that we have around the building, and the lighting and so forth will illuminate those in the evening. We already looked at our elevations here, so I won't go through that again. In terms of the site plan, you can see we kind of blend right in. The healthcare buildings today are really not built that differently than retail buildings. They're plumbing intensive, but you know, from a code standpoint, they're not a lot different. Even power requirements for the X-ray machine that we have here, it's come down so much since previous X-ray models. So, and the 60-foot depth for retail bays lends itself perfectly for a medical office situation. So conceivably, if in the far, far, far future, this building could even revert to a retail building again. We have some accessible parking in the front, and we have a patient drop-off zone on, does this point? I don't know. On the front left there. Oh, wait, it did. I saw a point. And on the back of the building, which will be primarily staff parking, there's actually a pickup spot that's striped and slated for ambulance pickup. Now, a handful of times a year, if a patient goes there and they really should have gone to the ER, they'll transport them immediately to the hospital. So it's out of the flow space. back door right there, wide door. And so if that happens, then that patient can be transported away. We have a loading zone on the back and a new waste enclosure. And the parking field along the front is just straight in line with the existing parking. Very clean layout. In terms of the floor plan, we're divided into urgent care on the southwest side. You can kind of see the shaded line in the middle for the demising wall. And we have primary care on the right. The urgent care is a four exam, one procedure room, and x-ray suite. And the primary care is a three-provider facility. We have nine exam rooms and one procedure room on that side. This slide kind of shows you the deep set entry, which will be the entry to both the urgent care and the primary care. And that is why we're showing the dual signage on the front of the building to clearly identify which side is which. And the we're primarily doing the full front storefront glazing at the waiting areas where we can. So again, tying into the way the retail facilities look, but obviously not having that in the patient areas. On the perimeter sides, we have just some high clerestory windows. And then we are actually, I think we're possibly the only building out there. We are taking advantage of the views of the Catalinas. Couldn't resist. So we've got a nice break room with some, full-height storefront glazing on that backside there, and an exam room that I picture might become someone's office at some point. So. Anyway, I think
that's it, yeah. I think have any questions for us, yeah.
Most of it.
All right, thank you so much. At this time, I'll open up questions to the commission if they had any.
Chair Gamble?
Yep. Commissioner Posey?
Yes, hi. First of all, I apologize. I don't have COVID, but I was exposed to it. So this was last minute anyway. I just want to thank the medical service, the developer of this medical service building, that it's only 26 feet to the top of the parapet instead of the allowed 45 feet. I think that's wonderful. And also, secondly, this is probably insignificant, but the Verizon business does no longer exist that is north of this proposed building.
Chair Gamble, Commissioner Posey, that is correct. Verizon has left that store.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you, Commissioner.
That's all.
Posey. Oh, did you have more questions?
No, that's all. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Did anybody else? All right. I think this is a great proposal. I think this town staff did a fabulous job with this. It really blends in so smoothly with the rest of the architecture that's surrounding. So great job. I love to hear that these collaborations happen and are so successful. So with that, I'll ask for a motion.
Yeah, I motion that we accept this proposal.
I second it.
Okay.
Hang on, Commissioner.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Commissioner Nichols?
I'm new. But I do think you did a marvelous job, and I think it makes it easier for us if when you come well-prepared like you did tonight. So thank you.
Thank you.
I move to recommend approval of the conceptual architecture for the proposed medical service building at the San Dorado Commercial Center based on the findings that the request complies with the design principles and design standards of the zoning code.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Posey. Do we have a second?
Yes, I'll second that. Sorry.
Oh,
yes.
That's okay. We all want to second it. So great.
Okay. Not rushing it along.
Ms. Ancona, will you please... Oh, actually, all those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? We're good.
Great.
Ms. Ancona, will you please read out our third agenda item?
Thank you all for your time.
Much.
Discussion and possible action on a request for a revision to the approved conceptual model home architecture for a new residential subdivision located north of Moore Road and east of La Cañada Drive, adjacent to La Cholla Air Park.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Ancona. I'll turn the time over to staff presenter, Mrs. Oden, now.
All right. Thank you, Chair Gamble, and good evening again, Commission. So the purpose of this case is to consider a request from Fairfield Homes to add an additional option to the approved architecture for a new subdivision known as Vermilion at Rancho Vistoso. The proposed option is to have stucco pop-outs instead of stone veneer on the desert modern elevations only. The Planning and Zoning Commission approved the conceptual architecture for the subdivision in 2020 with stone veneer on the desert modern elevations, which is included in your packets. Due to the preference of home buyers and to provide additional variety in the subdivision, Fairfield Homes is requesting to add the option of no stone to the desert modern elevations only. The applicant has also updated the colors and materials for the entire subdivision, which is also included in your packets for consideration. The proposed changes are substantial enough that they require consideration from the Planning and Zoning Commission, so this case is presented tonight for discussion and possible action. So to orient ourselves, the subject property, which is outlined in yellow on this slide, is located north of Moore Road and west of La Cañada Drive and is adjacent to the La Cholla Air Park and is also located within the Rancho Vistoso planned area development. The subdivision consists of 29 single-family residential homes. This slide shows a couple examples of the proposed additional options. On the left side of the slide are two front facades, which were previously approved by commission, and those include the stone veneer. On the right side of the slide is the proposed option without stone and stucco pop-outs instead. To be clear, homeowners will still be able to choose the stone veneer option if they wish. The primary change will be on the front facades where the stone veneer is currently located, and so really any changes to the side or rear elevations will be minimal to non-existent. The proposed change provides three varied hues and utilizes pop-outs and inset windows to articulate the front facades. Roof lines and floor plans have not changed from the approved plans. It's just replacing the stone veneer with the option of stucco pop-outs. The applicant is also proposing a revision to all seven approved color schemes and also proposing an eighth additional scheme, which is shown on this slide. Examples of the approved color schemes are shown on the left side of the slide, and the proposed revisions are shown in the middle of the slide. The proposed color schemes are code compliant and add additional contrast to the subdivision, and again, would apply to all models and elevations in the subdivision. This slide shows nearby architecture of single-family homes. The proposed option to have stucco pop-outs on the desert modern elevation still complements the surrounding architecture in the community. Staff has found that the additional option to the approved conceptual architecture and revised colors and materials are consistent with the design principles and design standards of the zoning code, and staff recommends approval. And as a reminder, the Planning and Zoning Commission is the deciding body for this type of application. This concludes my presentation, and the applicant is also here tonight to provide additional details about their proposal. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Oden. I will now turn the time over to the applicant.
Good evening. My name is Jeff Despain with Fairfield Homes. Thank you, Ms. Oden, for a wonderful presentation. Just a reminder of, or to kind of recap of where we're at. We do get a lot of requests from customers, especially more common these days than in the past, to have clean lines, architecture, more contemporary feel to the house. There have been comments that even though the elevation is a flat roof style, more contemporary feel, that the added stone brings in more traditional elements to the home and the face of the home. And over the past years, even outside of this specific development, we have had requests to remove the stone. So we have done so in multiple different jurisdictions and across Tucson. Currently, our take rate on that is about 45% removing the stone. We see pockets of that where the take rate is higher. This being one of them, this take rate is about 55%, where customers are looking for the smooth, clean lines, more of the stucco facade, and less traditional feel of the stone. To continue with what Ms. Oden has presented, again, just recapping the revised color schemes, the effort here, we received feedback on our initial color schemes that it was a lot of brown tones. So we basically cut them in half to where we have three brown tones and three kind of gray to green tones, adding an additional two at the end, the additional eighth as far as this one is concerned, to add more, even more gray tones where it seems like most of our customers are going. To hit the elevations here, we've included this here as a slide of the across the top is the original color schemes. Across the bottom are the revised color schemes. You'll notice the first three are fairly, they resemble the original approved. Just moving and trying to get more contrast of the earth tones, the browns. As we move from left to right, you'll see where we introduce a little more green. Kind of end with our eighth scheme towards the end there that introduces more gray tones to the current palette. The next slide here basically goes over by plan the individual differences going on the Desert Modern elevation. So again, this is our 2200 plan, which is our entry level plan. On the left, you'll see where the stone enhancements are included as optioned, and you'll see to the right where the stone is removed and replaced with accent paint colors. So the structure of the home is not changing. The design and the structural building as far as the framing is identical on both of these. It's just literally the stone facade is being removed on the right and complemented with accent colors. Next plan here, this is the 2700 plan. Again, same comments. You can see the differences there where the contrasting colors are on the right. Our 3200 plan, 3300 plan, and I apologize on the rendering on the right. You really do not get a good sense of the depth. That's about, probably say 15 feet to 18 feet. From the face of the garage to the covered entry. You can see a little bit better with the rendering on the left, more just because it was two different companies. But there is that same depth perception there, or the depth of the entry that has not been changed. And then lastly, our 3800 plan. This is the largest plan in the series. This one, I think, complements the colors the best on the version without the stone. You really get that contemporary feel and the contrasting colors. That concludes my presentation, and I'm available for questions.
All right, thank you. I'll now open up to the commission for any questions.
Yeah, Jeff, I think you're... thank you. Thank you, Chair Gamble. I believe you're already building out there, right?
Correct.
As I've driven by there?
Correct.
So how far along are you?
We have most of the homes started in the community. So it's a relatively small community. It's 29 lots. We have all but one home scheduled to start. Well, we have two homes not currently started, but the rest have started, yes.
All right. Thank you. Did we have any other commissioner comments? Commissioner Bergsma, Commissioner Posey? Oh, all right. I will ask for a motion then. Commissioner or Vice Chair Harrington.
I move to approve the revision of the conceptual model home architect for the Desert Modern elevation based on the findings that the request complies with the design principles and design standards of the zoning code.
Can I get a second? Oh, thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right, that motion passes. Thank you so much. And Ms. Ancona, could you please read out our fourth agenda item?
Public hearing, discussion, and possible action for proposed code amendments to align and clarify standards in the multifamily zoning districts, Chapter 23 provisions for recreation area, Chapter 26 definitions, Chapter 31, and other related items.
All right, thank you. I'd now like to turn the time over to our staff presenter, Mrs. Sims.
Thank you, Chair Gamble. Good evening, Commission. My name is Melini Sims. I'm a principal planner with the Town of Oro Valley. So our purpose this evening is to consider a proposed amendment to align and clarify existing standards as they apply to a variety of permitted housing types. This includes low-rise, high-density housing, also known as the missing middle housing. This item was discussed with the Commission last month through a study session, so the focus of tonight's presentation is to address your questions and feedback and provide updates on further refinements that were made to the code. This item is being presented tonight for discussion and recommendation. So as discussed last month, the town has received four applications to develop housing projects with a mix of detached and attached housing units. Upon review of these applications, two issues became clear. One, there is gray area within our existing code as to what standards apply to developments with a mix of detached and attached housing units. And second, the existing code treats the same housing development differently based on the zoning district it is in. So an example of this is an attached housing development or a townhome development would have different recreation standards if they were built in a R4 district or an R6 district, even though the product is the same. And before I go through all the details of the code amendment, I want to talk big picture for a moment. So at its core, the proposed code amendment is housekeeping to really reorganize application of existing standards. It does not include any substantive changes, and there are no changes proposed to the parking requirements or design standards. There are also no new housing types being proposed, nor is this allowing more density. But the primary goal of the proposed code amendment is to ensure accurate application of existing standards to already permitted housing types to resolve the issues within the current code. And to meet this goal, the proposed code amendment accomplishes the four tasks that are listed on the screen. This includes redefining housing types, aligning and clarifying existing zoning standards, which include recreation requirements, and the setbacks in an R6 zoning district. Again, we went through all of these elements in detail last month, so I'm really going to focus on addressing your comments and questions this evening. So first, with regard to the housing definitions. The proposed code amendment defines housing types by built form rather than industry terms such as townhome or patio home. Although focusing on the built form is a tenet of form-based zoning, this approach is still unique. But since this approach is unique, the Commission wanted to make sure that the new housing definitions remain clear for the public. So to help bridge the gap between the industry terms or the common terms used by the public and the proposed definitions, each one includes the common type of housing associated with each term. And this is shown in bold on the screen. So for example, our proposed definition of attached dwelling unit includes duplexes, patio homes, and townhomes, or other similar housing types. This approach removes the existing overlap in the housing definitions and prevail over time as industry terms do tend to change. Additionally, the Commission wanted to make sure the differences between housing types were clear, specifically to make sure that the difference between a two-story attached and a multi-level product was clear. So to differentiate between each housing type, the unit arrangement is key. Per the definitions on the screen, both attached and multi-level products allow one family per unit. However, an attached product arranges the units side by side or front to back. Therefore, a two-story attached product is only considered two units with one family living on each side, as shown in the picture in the middle. Whereas a multi-level product arranges units on top of each other. So a two-story multi-level product, such as an apartment, would be considered four units, as you have families living not only side by side, but also on top of each other. So essentially, if the families are living side by side or front to back, they're attached. But if you have families that are living on top of each other or even on top of a non-residential use, it's a multi-level product. And then using these new definitions, characteristics of each housing types were reviewed to align the existing zoning standards. And this includes the parking and design standards. The current code is again unclear on which parking requirements and design standards apply to the developments with a mix of detached and attached units. The proposed code does not change requirements to either the parking code or design standards. Rather, it aligns them to the appropriate housing development types. For instance, all residential subdivisions or projects with one unit on an individual lot will require the same amount of parking per unit. Regarding recreation code, the code currently requires a certain amount of land be provided as shared recreation space. As requested by the commission, the last significant change to these amounts was in 1996. So staff can agree and acknowledge that these numbers may need to be updated. However, this analysis is being done as part of a larger upcoming amendment to the rec area code. The proposed code amendment aims to just align the existing required rec amounts applicable to each development type. But upon further review and as new information to present to the commission this evening, the proposed code amendment also requires 25% open space for all non-residential developments in a residential service or an R6 zoning district. So currently, these two multifamily zoning districts are the only ones that allow office or similar commercial uses. However, the existing code requires rec standards that are most applicable to a residential development. Therefore, the proposed code amendment now introduces that 25% open space is required if non-residential is developed in these districts. And the 25% is derived from what is currently required in our neighborhood commercial district, which is similar to the RS or R6 district. And by doing so, the one-size-fits-all approach that we currently have in the code is replaced with open space and rec standards based on the applicable development type. And then lastly, in addition to aligning the rec standards, I just want to remind the commission that there are other minor changes to make sure the amenities for a multifamily development are clear and also allow distribution of the shared rec space to a limit, 1 to 2 distribution dispersion of spaces administratively approved, and any additional distribution must go to commission. So next, I want to discuss the third element of the proposed code amendment, which is the R6 perimeter setbacks. The R6 perimeter setbacks, which is the distance between the development and surrounding uses, are unique in that they are not based on adjacent uses like other multifamily districts. The proposed code amendment aligns the existing setbacks to the corresponding use, so it maintains the existing 20 to 30 feet except when the development is next to non-residential or similar densities, then it allows a setback to be 10 feet. So to walk the commission through an example and further explain the reasoning behind this change, I want to walk through the image on the screen. This is a development located on the northeast corner of Linda Vista and Orca Road. It is where Dutch Brothers and Neaters is located. In between the commercial development and the large lot residential to the east is a high-density development. The proposed code amendment would allow the multi-level homes to be closer to the non-residential development to support walkability and connectivity. This also creates a better transition between all three uses by placing the high-density residential closer to the more compatible use, yet further away from the large lot homes. I also want to clarify that the 10-foot setback mostly applies to single-story buildings. The code currently requires all two-story buildings be 100 feet away from single-family zoning districts. Additionally, the Planning and Zoning Commission may recommend that all buildings be single-story if they are within 50 feet of a similarly zoned residential district. Both of those standards are proposed to be maintained in the code. And then lastly, R6 allows the greatest range of housing types, including detached homes, attached homes, and multi-level products. In response to the Commission's questions last time, the maximum height in an R6 zoning district is 25 feet or two stories, and the current distance required between all of these building types ranges from 10 to 20 feet based on the building height. Prior to 1997, a 10-foot separation was required between all buildings and multifamily zoning districts. However, over time, this separation was removed from the RS district and revised in the R6 district. Upon further research and from discussion with the Commission, the proposed code amendment has been refined to acknowledge the different characteristics between a detached home and cluster of attached homes and a multi-level product. So as an update for the Commission to consider, the proposed code amendment now maintains the existing 10 to 20 foot distance between multi-level products. For instance, two-story multi-level buildings will still require a 20-foot separation. The proposed amendment would allow a 10-foot separation, but only between detached or clusters of attached units, whether they are single or two-story. Again, this is a common distance in many single-family subdivisions and is the existing separation required in the R4 district, which is our current attached home zoning district. Staff did reach out to Golden Ranch Fire District per the Commission's discussion last month, and they were able to verify that there are fire protection measures in place for this common distance between buildings. Additionally, as I mentioned earlier and discussed during the Commission meeting last month, there currently aren't any distant requirements in the RS zoning district. So the proposed code amendment will mimic these same requirements in RS, which again will maintain that 20-foot distance for two-story multi-level products. The proposed code amendment was reviewed for conformance with the general plan and complies with several goals and policies related to supporting diverse housing types for current and future residents. And in summary, the existing code illogically requires different standards for the same housing development. Additionally, it is unclear on which standards apply to developments with a mix of detached and attached products. The code amendment resolves these issues to ensure accurate application of the code to a variety of permitted housing types. It is largely a housekeeping in nature with no substantive changes. Rather, it clarifies and aligns existing standards with no changes proposed to the parking or design standards and minor changes proposed to the REC and R6 setback standards. The proposed code amendment does not add any new housing types, nor does it allow more high-density residential. But upon further review and after discussion with the Commission last month, it has been updated to make sure appropriate open space is provided for non-residential development in the RS and R6 zoning districts, and to make sure the existing separation between multi-level buildings is maintained. This concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Sims. I appreciate your work and the update, and Yeah, well, I think we had a lot of comments the last time, and it's great to see these changes and updates, and I appreciate that. So I am going to open up the time to the commission. Or no, we've got a public hearing.
Correct.
I am going to open up the public hearing right now. I do not have any blue cards, so I will also now close the public hearing. And now we will start with commissioner comments. Sorry, Moini, there was no cards. I should have told you. All right, Commissioner Nichols.
Chair Gamble, I have a question for Ms. Sims. On one of the slides backwards where you had the recreation, mm-hmm. I think, could we take a look at that? Right, sure. There. I was curious about why we say 50% of 35% of the site. Is that common usage, or what am I missing?
Sure. Chair Gamble, Commissioner Nichols, so that is the 50% of 35% was done back in 1996. That was the code amendment that changed that to that number. And I definitely acknowledge that it needs to be likely updated, but part of that will be researching what other jurisdictions do, what is the right fit for our jurisdiction, and then part of that will be part of the larger code amendment to the rec area, which will also be discussed with the Parks and Rec Advisory Board to go through them as well.
Just to make sure I understand, that means 17.5%, right?
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
Maybe an easier way to say it, yes.
Could we go to the next one? I really liked what you did. May I ask another question?
Oh.
Thank you. So I really liked this diagram here, but what I wasn't sure about was, what are the existing setbacks between, you know, Neeters and the, you know, the high density area and the other one? You said that it would change that, but I can't. Can you tell me what it is now and how it would change?
Sure. Chair Gamble, Commissioner Nichols. So if the existing R6 setbacks were applied to this development, it would be 30 feet away from the non-residential, because that would be its front. And then all the other sides would be 20 feet. I will say, though, for this particular development, from the large lot residential would be the 100 feet, because they're all two-story buildings. So,
and can you tell us what it is right now on the picture we're looking at?
So on the picture you are looking at, they were subject to requirements in the L corridor PAD, which are very close to ours. So the rear setback, or the setback away from the large lot residential, is 100 feet. And the front setback, the distance between the apartments and the commercial, I believe, is a little over 50 feet.
And that would change to 10?
It would allow going up to 10, yes.
So that would be like right up against it, is what you're saying. The back would be the same, but you would, it would be one-fifth of what we're looking at right here. Is that correct?
Correct, yes. That would be the minimum.
So if I could just clarify, Chair Gamble, Commissioner Nichols. So in this particular graphic we're looking at, it's a little bit over 55 feet back from where the non-residential is, as otherwise would be required, would be 30 feet, because that's right. The front, right? So 10 feet is only on the sides and rear, right, Ms. Malini, Ms. Sims? Or are we, yeah.
Sorry. 10 feet would be on the side next to the non-residential to the commercial. Correct.
I mean, I can see there's parking here, right? So clearly there couldn't be parking. So that would be like the back of the building could be 10 feet from the commercial area. Is that what we're saying?
Correct. And so even in this scenario, they could have placed the building, redesigned it with the parking behind the buildings, and moved the buildings about 20 feet closer, because they could have gone to 30 feet. They built them at 55, roughly.
Thank you.
All right, did we have any other comments? Vice Chair Harrington.
I had a question. Was the fire department, did they have any suggestions or ideas about that being so close to the other property?
Sure. Chair Gamble, Vice Chair Harrington. So when we reached out to Golden Ranch Fire, they count buildings as separate buildings if they're 6 feet apart. So with 10 feet, they were comfortable with that. What would maybe triggered, depending on the size of the building, is more fire flow and having sprinklers in the buildings.
A follow-up question. Of course, we probably should have the fire department here because it's another fire department question. If it's a two-story building and have to put a ladder up, would there be enough room with it being so close to another building?
Sure. Commissioner Gamble, Chair, Vice Chair Harrington, we do review to make sure that there is enough room for the fire trucks to be able to get around the buildings. And again, they kind of, I believe, balance that with if it's sprinklered and it, or not. And I don't know.
And Chair Gamble, Commissioner Harrington. So with a tall building like that, I believe if it's over 30 feet, they have to be able to allow a ladder truck that you referenced. And in our conversations with Golden Ranch, that just needs to be met on one side of the building so that their ladder truck can get to the building. So if you look at the graphic in front of you, you can see that there are buildings inside that they can at least get to one side of it, right? So it isn't necessarily that that has to be provided around the entirety of the building. They just have to be able to get close enough to it on one side. I hope that helps.
Sort of. Thank you.
All right. Do we have any other questions, comments? Commissioner Bretsma, Posey?
Yes, Chair Gamble.
All right. You got the floor, Commissioner Posey.
Thank you so much. And I do believe I brought this up last time, and I just want to reiterate that these so-called, what they're called, what you're calling industrial turns, you know what, those to me are understandable. And then when you go to, I'm just going to take this for example, apartments, like we all know apartments, what apartments are. And so they want to change, you want to change that to dwelling units or multi-level. And I don't, let's just use that one for example, but I do not see, I don't understand why you would have to change that. Well, one thing, and I'm not speaking for the Oro Valley citizens, but I just believe that would be more understandable to keep it as, say, apartments.
Do you want me to? Chair Gamble, Commissioner Posey. So the reason for changing it to more of these broader definitions like multi-level is so we can better differentiate between each housing type. So the issue we have now with the industry terms, I mean, apartments is a great example. It is pretty clear. But right now, our definition of apartment is a building for three or more families. So our problem arises when we have three townhomes. It's all one building attached next to each other. And that is a different product than an apartment. And how we differentiate between that, because our current definition of a townhome is a dwelling unit attached on one side and attached on the sides. Our multi-level definition, it does broaden the term. So apartments are definitely one housing type in multi-level, but you could also have a mixed-use building where you have non-residential on the bottom and the dwelling unit on the top. So that was our reasoning for using these terms, is to kind of be a little bit broader and allow more of those common industry terms to filter under them, if you will. I hope that clarifies.
Did that help clarify things, Commissioner Posey?
Yes, somewhat. Thank you.
Okay. Does she have access to this slide that you have up? Because I feel like the visual is really helpful.
Chair Gamble, I believe they have video of what's being portrayed on that screen. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure they do.
Okay.
No, that's correct.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah, because I feel like
the pictures really help explain it.
Yeah.
For me. At least I'm a visual learner and being able to see that.
And Chair Gamble, if that's something the commission would like us to include in the definitions, I mean, we could certainly be open to that.
Yeah.
If it's, you know, because the picture is worth 1,000 words kind of thing.
Right. Well, yeah, I think that would be great. I would love to add that on as an amendment if Joe thinks that's...
Chair Gamble, this is one time when I'm not going to stop what you're doing or interject with what you're doing, but one of the things I did want to insert is there is a whole separate layer of codes that this board doesn't have any control over. They are our building and fire safety codes. So if anything becomes a building or fire safety issue at the time of going through permitting, fire and our building officials go through that to make sure that we are not building unsafe buildings. This is only one layer of code.
All right. Do we have any other questions from the commission?
Chair Gamble.
Commissioner Bergsma.
Yes, thank you. First of all, I think staff's done a good job on this, done a lot of research, a lot of thought given to it, and I appreciate that they've responded to the questions and comments we had at our study session. So I generally support this. I'm going to get into the weeds a bit. There is a style called the carriage house. And a carriage house is basically an apartment over a garage. And sometimes the garage is attached to another residence. What is that, Ms. Sims? How would you describe that, as multi-level or attached?
Chair Gamble, Commissioner Bergsma. So if the unit was over a garage, it would, and then attached to a house, it would be attached. Now, if the unit was over another unit or a non-residential use, like let's say that unit was the second story of the house and then they had the garage attached, I think I'm making it way more complicated than I need to, then that would be multi-level. So really, again, it's if the unit's attached, a use, or a unit is above a use, if you will, rather than above an open space, like the garage.
So you wouldn't define the garage as another use in this case?
Right. It would not be a unit. Correct.
Okay. I was just curious. But generally, I think you've done a good job here, and I'm comfortable with the broader terminology that you're using to define these different kinds of residential units. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Bergsma. Commissioner Sturman.
Thank you, Chair Gamble. Help me define what is walkability. When you say that you want to reduce the distance, you know, for walkability, are you implying that if you reduce and narrow the buildings between the buildings, that people can walk easier?
Chair Gamble, Commissioner Sturmer. So if the space between the buildings and there's less pavement between the buildings and the commercial use, it would encourage walkability and connectivity to the commercial side.
That term only deals with a residential and a commercial application?
The term walkability?
Or connectivity? Is that what you're...
So walkability and connectivity are definitely reviewed for all sites, non-residential, residential. What we're really looking at is by reducing the space, the distance one has to go between the residential and the commercial, it will encourage more walkability or walking.
Did you have another question?
No, thank you much.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? All right. I didn't have any questions. I really appreciate the revisions that you guys have made based on our last session. I know all of the concerns that I had have been met, and I really appreciate the town staff working with us and the broader definition. So I'm going to ask for a motion, but I would ask that if we could add an amendment to have the graphics on this slide or similar graphics included in the definitions when they are published and updated. if everyone agrees with that. So if I could get a motion.
Do you need a motion on the amendment or just overall motion?
Overall motion.
Okay. I move to recommend approval of the proposed code amendments to revise Chapter 23, Family Standards, Chapter 26, Provisions for Recreation Area Standards, Chapter 31, Definitions and Other Related Sections, based on the finding the code amendments are in conformance with the general plan, with the stated amendment by the chair.
All right. Do I have a second?
Second.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? No. All right. We are finished with the agenda items. I'd now like to turn the time over to Mr. Spaeth for our planning update.
Yes, thank you, Chair Gamble, members of the commission. So with my planning update tonight, I want to draw your attention to we have a neighborhood meeting tomorrow night in here. If you weren't aware of that, I hope you were. For a proposed drive-through smoothie restaurant on the property located on the southeast corner of Lambert and La Cañada, right there in front of Harvest. We also have another neighborhood meeting scheduled for June 29th. This is going to be the second neighborhood meeting for the Naranja Trails subdivision. So for those of you that were here for the first one, we've obviously gone through the review, and now we're ready to go back and present or have the applicant present it to the neighbors. As of right now, we do not have any agenda items for next month's meeting. I know our deadline for noticing and whatnot is coming up here pretty soon, so there's a decent chance that that might get canceled, so stay on the lookout for that. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mr. Spaeth. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
Make a motion that we adjourn.
Second?
Second.
All right. Meeting adjourned. Thank you so much, everyone.